From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Melissa Block. 40 years ago, 500,000 free-wheeling, free-smoking, free-loving, music-loving hippies danced, covered in mud, surrounding a stage on a farm. At least those are the images that are conjured when we talk about Woodstock. But besides the mud part, how much of it is true? Karen Michelle tried to find out.
I wasn't there. I was thousands of miles away in Barrow, Alaska, and I don't think I had a clue that just after an astronaut landed on the moon, there was Woodstock, which for 3 days and 500,000 people was the center of the world. Artie Kornfeld was one of the organizers of the festival. For him, the torch burns bright.
That's still my whole trip, keeping the spirit of Woodstock alive.
And that doesn't mean just the good stuff.
I did have a gun pulled on me by some guy who said I was a hippie fascist, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash's road manager saved my life by jumping the guy.
But for the most part, Woodstock was an immense gathering of people who were into music, had no idea about camping, but definitely wanted to have a good time. Perry Teasdale went to the festival in Bethel, New York, as a video artist. Today he publishes a local newspaper.
I think I look like a geezer.
Back in 1969, Teasdale had long hair and didn't dress in the chinos and pressed shirt he wears now.
Large brown kind of Stetson cowboy hat that was punched up in the center, and big motorcycle boots and dirty jeans, and a VW bus full of old video equipment.
Teasdale's black and white fuzzy videos almost look as if they're shot in a sort of slowed motion.
Have you had your oats yet?
Is this something for the CIA or something? What is it?
He repeatedly asks the question, are you having a good time? And the kids look back incredulous, as if saying, do you have to ask? These tapes, these documents, seem to validate the Woodstock legend of all free, all peaceful, all love.
That's part of the sort of mythology of Woodstock, is that it's free, it's peaceful. I don't buy into that.
Surprising, considering that Michael Lang was one of the producers of the festival. Lang lives near the town of Woodstock on a 100-acre estate he bought in 1979. It's so big that I couldn't figure out which building to go to find him. But, you know, 40 years ago, it wasn't about the money, man.
Somebody forgot to roll the ticket booths into place in time to beat the traffic. And once we focused on that, they couldn't be moved. There were no ticket booths. Most of the people who came were looking for a place to buy a ticket, and you could not buy a ticket.
Still, the bands had to be paid. Bill Thompson managed the then-hot Jefferson Airplane.
I remember saying to Michael Lang, how are we going to get paid? And he said, don't worry about it, man. Isn't this beautiful? Well, that was the worst thing he could have said to me. So I got everybody together, and I said, we should just tell them we're not going to play unless we get paid. So they showed up a couple hours later with cashier checks for all the bands.
For their gig, the Airplane got $10,000. It was 6 a.m. when Grace Slick greeted the crowd.
All right, friends, you have seen the heavy groups. Now you will see morning maniac music. Believe me, yeah.
The band had stayed up all night, and to be honest with you, I think did just about every legal drug known to man. So I think they were a little woozy at first, but then the Black Beauties kicked in, speed. And about 20 minutes into the set, it was really an excellent set.
Would you like to know a secret just between you and me? I don't know where I'm going next. I don't know who I'm gonna be.
Few people claimed that the music was very good. It was the context more than anything. Still, for Bob Solomon, who's now in the music industry in Nashville, sound was everything.
There was only one act that did a passable job, and that was Carlos Santana. Everybody else just was three sheets to the wind, and I mean, they were just out of it.
It's a soundtrack that had a stuttering start. The equipment hadn't arrived, and organizer Michael Lang needed somebody to play acoustic. He convinced Richie Havens that he was the guy.
I hounded him until he finally agreed. That was, for me, you know, the moment between trying to do this and doing it.
And so I got up there and I sang my 40 minutes, and I walked back, and they said, Richie, would you do four more songs? Okay, four more. So I went back, I sang four more songs. They did this to me six times. I sang 2 hours and 45 minutes, and every song I knew. And the one I made up on stage. Freedom, freedom, freedom,
freedom, freedom, freedom.
We were safe because we were in Bethel. Bethel means the house of God.
And like all houses of the Lord, the Woodstock story is largely a matter of faith. But for Woodstock organizer Michael Lang, it was a respite from the Vietnam War, the struggle for civil rights, assassinations, and Richard Nixon.
It was this moment of hope that you sort of looked at and said, my God, this is possible even in the darkest of times. So I think that it holds out that hope for this wonderful experience. For us, that's what it was.
I guess, like everything, to believe it, you had to be there. For NPR News, I'm Karen Michelle.